Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves.
We're at the Author Studio at Book Expo America 2011 in New York City, and we're sitting with editor Elizabeth Thompson from Backbeat Books, and she has edited a Bob Dylan biography called No Direction Home. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello. Nice to be here.
You took Robert Shelton's biography, No Direction Home, and you included 20,000 words that were originally cut from the manuscript. What prompted you to basically redo the biography?
Well, I knew Shelton for the last 15 years of his life in England. He died quite suddenly. And he always felt that I arbitrated between him and his many publishers for the publication of the first edition in 1986. And he always felt that that edition had been, quote-unquote, abridged over troubled waters, which is a very Shelton pun. It was the subject of a lot of battles, and in order to make it publishable in one volume, they had to cut a lot of stuff from it. And because it went on so long, he had to write this very thin coda, which meant, although it was quite short, more stuff had to be cut from the good front end of the 60s to fit it. So it had a very unsatisfactory end, and it had a lot of good stuff that was simply on the cutting room floor. And I felt it. I had a manuscript from when I worked on it with him in the early 80s, and I always felt and agreed with his surviving family that it would be nice at some point to do a version that was closer to what I felt Bob Shelton would have wanted, and I hope this is it.
How did Robert Shelton feel that so much of his manuscript was cut originally?
He was very disappointed, and I think he died a disappointed man because it was his life's work, and his goal was to write not a showbiz biography, but to write a serious cultural study of someone who he felt should be talked of in the same breath as Picasso or Orson Welles or Charlie Chaplin. And therefore to give him context, foreground, background. And he was forced to cut a huge amount of material while his publishers bayed basically for blood. They wanted sensationalism. And he always said, I'm not going to sell off the relics of a friend.
So for you, was this simply to right a wrong? And I'm also guessing you have to really be into your subject to spend all the time you spent with Bob Dylan's biography.
Yes, I mean, I met Shelton because I was a great admirer of Dylan. I mean, I'm too young to have been part of the generation. I'm 53 and I was in London for a start, so I missed it all the first time round. I saw Dylan in 78 on the world tour, which is how I came to meet Shelton. And I was obsessive, and I'm still fascinated in Dylan and the 1960s culturally. And it was Shelton who gave me a start in journalism, helped me when I was just newly out of college. And he was a friend, in the old-fashioned sense, and mentor. And I think I probably repaid debts to him in his lifetime, but this does feel like a debt properly repaid. And I think he deserves it because he played a very significant role on the New York Times in bringing to the fore all kinds of new artists. I mean, not just Bob Dylan, but Joan Baez and Judy Collins and Janis Ian and Joni Mitchell and countless others. He played a very significant role, and in a sense as a father of popular music journalism. And he's kind of been ignored, and I hope this gives him his place in the sun once again.
Was the biography endorsed by Dylan?
It was endorsed by Dylan in the sense that when it was published first time round, Dylan calls Shelton to come to his film trailer. He was filming in London. It was never authorised. It was never intended to be authorised. But it is the only book with which Bob Dylan fully cooperated. And that included giving Shelton access to his parents, whom no one ever interviewed, and to friends and family, including people like Joan Baez, obviously.
And did you as an editor feel a need or a desire to seek out Bob Dylan to get his approval to do what you've done?
We did. We ran it past his office. We were doing this, and did he want to say anything? And the message came back from his manager that he wished us luck, but he didn't have anything to say on it at this point, which is what I would have expected.
So you've met him?
I did meet him. I met him backstage. Actually, I thought I was hallucinating because I was taken backstage to meet him just before the publication of Chronicles. And in fact, I spent the first sort of 5 or 10 minutes standing on the side of the stage while he was doing Like a Rolling Stone and then All Along the Watchtower as encores. And I thought I was on something. And then we got ushered backstage and I spent 15 minutes chatting to him. And actually, I have to say there was a lot, you know, it's kind of, you always risk disappointment when you meet your idols and heroes. And actually, he was very pleasant and very nice and very low-key. And I said I was a great fan of Bob Shelton. He said, oh, really? And he talked a bit about how he'd written his memoir. And it was a nice meeting.
What will fans of Bob Dylan learn from the restored material?
Well, there is 20,000 words of new material. And it, although that material is distributed throughout the book, it's primarily in 61 to 66, when they were very close and hung around together in the village, and also in the chapter about his parents, the interview of his parents growing up. So in the famous interview chapter where Shelton and Dylan are together on a night flight from Nebraska to Denver, Colorado, and Dylan's talking in a very freewheeling fashion, there's a lot of new material in that chapter. But there's also material throughout. So there is new material, but there's also, you know, in some cases I added line by line, sentence by sentence. So in fact, it's closer to Shelton's original prose. There's much more resonance. The process of making it a shorter book had resulted in not necessarily kind of facts going, but the patterns of Dylan's speech, where Dylan was speaking, but also the resonance of Shelton's prose. So I've tried to restore that, so you get a much more of a sense of the people speaking and of Shelton narrating the story in their authentic voices.
Is it fair to call you a Dylan file, P-H-I-L-E?
I suppose it is. I mean, my way into this was learning to play guitar, listening to Joan Baez albums, and through that I got into Judy Collins, and then to Dylan and to Janis Ian, and then actually to be a great American 60s obsessive. I'm fascinated by the whole the civil rights movement by the Kennedys. I mean, Dylan opened up a world for me, and there is a world in Dylan's songs. I think if you look for it, then you take him seriously. And he's endured 50 years, and he will endure a lot longer, I think.
Throughout the process, what did you learn about Bob Dylan? Something new.
What did I learn that was new? I mean, I'm not sure what I learned that was new. What did strike me very forcibly when I was doing this book, and obviously I've read it lots of times over the last year, was how amazing that scene in the, I mean, I know that the Greenwich Village scene in the 60s was amazing, but the other thing that I think is very eye-popping now is the fact that there was no music business then. It was a very naive scene. There was Dylan, quite successful by 63, 64, living in a kind of ratty walk-up apartment in the village, and then latterly at the Earl, which is now the Washington Square Hotel, accessible to all in the Lincoln, Nebraska, Denver chapter. There's a fan waiting for him on the tarmac as he boards his plane. It's the naivete of the business and the accessibility of Dylan, the extent to which being cast as the spokesman, the messiah, having the fans around him all the time really did get to him, because actually there was no one really to protect him from the outside world, which began to press in on him very seriously. So I think the portrait of not just of the socio-cultural scene in Greenwich Village, but of just music and popular cultural life in a general sense in the 60s is amazing, because it's such a different world. I mean, you just don't have access. Shelton probably wouldn't have had access. I mean, they were friends, but you couldn't have. I don't think now you could have that sort of situation where you have a journalist knocking around with a group of young artists in kind of clubs and coffee houses and bars, becoming friends and then doing what he's done, because stars now want to control everything that's written about them. And I think that's what's so charming about this book. It's an insider's account, but it's also an objective account.
Liz, what's your next project?
That's a very good question. I have a wacky idea, well, a very ambitious idea for a folk festival in Washington Square. Whether I can bring that off, I don't know. All my dreams come true. I'd like to do some more on the 1960s. And in fact, there's a possibility of a film project coming out of this, which has got through quite a few hoops, but it remains to be seen whether we can get through the last few hoops. We'll see.
Are you saying you've written a screenplay?
No, I haven't written a screenplay, but I'm working with someone who's doing all that stuff. It's a very interesting project, not a straightforward documentary. It's a very, very intriguing project.
Very good. Elizabeth Thompson, she is the editor for Robert Shelton's original biography of Bob Dylan called No Direction Home, and the publisher is Backbeat Books. Thank you, Liz.
Thank you very much for having me.